With the new year, we are rebranding a segment on our show. The Hawaii Forest and Garden segment, which we launched a year ago, will take a broader view. Mauka Makai is more in keeping with Hawaiian culture and taking care of the land. Malama aina, malama the sea. Today, we focus in on rubbish trees. It's a complaint you commonly hear about. It's a pet peeve for some homeowners who don't like having to clean up after a messy tree that drops seeds, leaves, and fruit. The mess can be a liability and just makes for more work, and who needs that? Professor Ken Leonhardt is a professor of horticulture at the University of Hawaii, and he's been working to provide sterile trees for landscapers.
There are a lot of rubbish trees, trees that are prolific seed producers or prolific producers of seed pods. Leguminous trees are probably the biggest culprits. They produce hundreds or thousands sometimes of large seed pods. And what comes to mind would be the royal poinciana tree. It's a spectacular tree, but it can produce, a good-sized tree can produce over 1,000 seed pods, and sometimes they're 2 feet long. And you can't mow your lawn until you rake all those up. You could fill a pickup truck full of the seed pods from those. So we have created a seedless one, or a sterile one that is almost completely seedless. And there's a lot of others. There's the African tulip tree, which is not so much of a litter problem as it is an invasive species problem. It's all over the forest, and not so much the dry forest, but wherever there's a little bit of moisture, you'll find it, and it produces thousands of seeds. They're windblown, so they can travel long distances, and landscapers continue to use the plant because they say, well, there's no really good substitute, and it's quite attractive, and it fits in parking lot spaces and for street trees, and we haven't been able to propagate them as readily as we want, but we're working on that. One that I recently identified as sterile, four plants actually, is the octopus tree. Been working with that one for maybe about 6 or 7 years now, and finally we've come up with four different clones that flower, but the flowers immediately drop off. They have not produced any seed at all. And that plant is another one that's extremely invasive and a litter problem and also a bit of a hazard. The fruits are wet and you can slip on them. If they fall on a sidewalk and you happen to step into a bunch of those fruits, you can slip.
So you see those everywhere, though.
They are everywhere, and they stain anything they touch. You know, they've got some purple blackish kind of pigment in it. They'll stain your clothes. They stain sidewalks. They stain anyway. So a seedless one would be quite desirable, and I've now identified four, and probably I probably have more, but they haven't flowered yet. So you can't identify, you can't determine if they're sterile or not until they flower.
I see.
Yeah. So we have a lot of things that we anticipate sterility based on the techniques that we've used to manipulate the chromosomes or the crosses that we've made in the case of hybrids, but we have to wait till they flower. This spring and summer is going to be very exciting for me for shower trees. Shower trees, as you know, they're dependent on the species or the hybrid. They can produce enormous amounts of seed pods. I have 52 plants at the University of Hawaii Experiment Station in Waimanalo that are progeny of a three-species cross, and we have expectations of a high degree of sterility. We've identified, well, we haven't counted the chromosomes, but we've measured the DNA or quantified the DNA, and it's highly variable in that entire population, and that lends itself to a high degree of sterility. But so these haven't flowered yet, so.
So you don't know.
Yeah, but I will, and probably beginning about May, June, they should start flowering. Two of them flowered last year, and they were both sterile, and I'm expecting probably 35 to 40 of them to flower this year.
Okay, now I just went on a tree tour at Kapi'olani Park, and the city urban forestry folks shared that you shared some seedlings with them, and so they'll plant some trees to figure out, you know, are these sterile or not?
Yeah, I gave them several hundred plants of many different species. I just had way too many. Stan Oka, the person in charge of the urban forestry division, has places to plant them. Right now, I think they're all out at Mililani, but he's going to find places, and he's going to identify them individually and give me a map or at least some location information so I can keep track of them.
Right, so that'll be a help to the forestry division.
It's a help to them, perhaps, if they are sterile, and a big help to my research because I need more space to grow things.
Okay, and talk about the process, because you talked about chromosomes and clones, and you know, there folks are worried about GMO. So explain to people what you're doing.
Okay. These plants are not products of GMO. I'm just accelerating a process that's actually kind of natural. Well, it is a natural process. There are a number of species of plants that where periodically they will just have chromosome doubling, and that can be selected as a new variety if it shows important or useful characteristics. So I accelerate that process by using either the alkaloid colchicine or another what's called a mitotic poison, or rhizolin. And it interferes, using these agents, on a meristem, or a very young bud of a plant where cell division is occurring rapidly. It interferes with part of that doubling. It's part of that process. Okay, let me put it this way: when growth takes place, growth takes place as a result of cell division and cell multiplication. Chromosomes line up in the cell. They divide. They produce two daughter cells with the same number of chromosomes. Under the influence of rhizolin or colchicine, the chromosome numbers double, but they don't separate into two daughter cells. So if you started with a plant that had a cell that had 20 chromosomes, you would normally end up with two daughter cells, each with 20 chromosomes. In this case, you end up with a daughter cell of 40 chromosomes. And it'll stay that way, and if it continues to multiply, all the cells from that particular doubled cell will have 40 chromosomes. That's called a tetraploid, four sets of chromosomes. That sometimes leads to sterility. It has, in the case of the shower trees, 100% sterility. Or if the plants are fertile as tetraploids, you can cross them with diploids, with plants with two sets of chromosomes. The progeny will have three sets of chromosomes, and that's almost always sterile. That's how seedless watermelons are made. They cross tetraploids with diploids, they get triploids,
and voila.
Sterile. Yeah. bananas also. You don't see seeds in bananas because they're natural occurring triploids. They've been selected by humans. There are diploid bananas in their native habitats, and they are full of seeds.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Well, I know this topic is interesting to some just because, you know, there's a big push to plant all these trees to offset carbon, offset the pollution. And when you start to think about and start to identify, you know, the street trees, what's out there, and you want to get people to plant trees, but that's the biggest complaint. I don't want a rubbish tree in front of my house. You know, the homeowner isn't going to buy into this idea if he's got to rake up pods, right. You know, whether they're from mahogany trees or monkey pods.
Mm-hmm. Monkey pods, interesting one. We have sterile monkey pods. Although I've got a few plants that are sterile, but they produce a seed pod that doesn't have any seeds in it. It's about the size of a Chinese flat pea. But there's no seeds and there's no resin in it. So it's not going to stick to your slippers like typical monkey pod fruits do. And we've also created, I think I have about 10 triploid monkey pod trees, and I expect those to be even a higher degree of sterility and not produce any fruits at all.
We just did a segment on some special grass on the Big Island, Vetiver grass, I think it's called.
It's a clumping grass, so it doesn't spread readily. It's got really deep root systems, so it's good for erosion management. It produces a flower head, but doesn't set seed. So it's really a wonderful plant.
And you have a bag full of goodies. You have this giant seed pod, which is like a yardstick. What is this?
This is a species of shower tree.
Oh, my goodness.
The genus is Cassia. All shower trees are in the genus Cassia. And this is Cassia grandis. It's about a meter long. And
wow.
I never weighed it, but it's probably half a pound
or
more.
Wow, it could do some serious damage if it lands on your head.
Yeah, or on the hood of your car. And that's the very reason why this plant isn't used in landscapes. It's a very, very nice tree. It's a nice pink flowers. It's got a long flowering season. But you just wouldn't use it in landscapes for this reason.
It's a weapon.
So we created a sterile one.
I see. Okay.
I think four clones of this that are sterile. This is Cassia bakeriana. Feel it. It's got a nice texture.
Fluffy.
Yeah.
Furry.
Yeah, it's very tactile.
Like suede almost.
But the reason it's not used.
Oh, it's stinky.
Yeah. The fruits stink. The flowers don't have any odor at all. In fact, the flowers have a kind of a faint, pleasant, sweet smell to them.
But this is like PU.
I know. The fruit is really stinky. So that's why it's not used much. It's occasionally used in areas where you don't get foot traffic near the tree. But it'll produce, one mature plant can produce more than 1,000 of these fruits.
Wow.
And they don't stink until they're broken. That's why I handed you the broken one.
Okay.
this one, it doesn't smell at all. But when you break it, the resin inside that encloses the seeds, it reeks. So we have sterile forms of this.
Okay, yeah, I would not want that in my yard, most definitely. Yeah. Okay. Anything else just about this research and just what is it, well, what is it that excites you about being able to do this?
Do you remember a tree that was grown? It was called vertical willy willy or tall willy willy. It's not so much grown as a landscape plant, but it was used by every farmer as a windbreak plant. They would get very tall, 20, 25 feet tall, and they were easy to propagate, and it was everybody's favorite windbreak plant. There were thousands and thousands, maybe millions, grown. And then in 2005, a wasp came in from Africa, western part of Africa, called the Erythrina gall wasp, and within about 3 or 4 years, it just completely decimated the entire population of Erythrina variegata. And also, it heavily damaged and reduced the numbers of our only native willy willy, which is Erythrina sandwichensis. We treated the Erythrina variegata, the vertical form, and we made some polyploid plants with multiple sets of chromosomes. And for reasons that we still don't understand, but we're going to get a graduate student working on it, it's resistant to the gall wasp. So I'm very hopeful that we will be able to reintroduce that vertical growing willy willy plant within a couple of years as a gall wasp tolerant variety. We have 3 clones for sure that are totally resistant to the gall wasp, and we're still looking at some others that we haven't really exposed them yet to the gall wasp because they're too young.
And what about our natives then?
The natives, we have 5 plants of the Erythrina sandwichensis, which is the native willy willy, that have a very high level of tolerance to the gall wasp.
So maybe we can bring those back?
Yeah, I'm hopeful.
Leonhard says his research is very rewarding and he absolutely loves going to work every day.